Welcome to the Gooder Podcast. I am your host, Diane Freich. As partner and CMO of Retail Voodoo, an award-winning branding agency, I have met with and worked with some of the most amazing women in the naturals industry, food, beverage, wellness, and fitness. As such, I decided to create the Gooder Podcast to interview these great people and subject matter experts and have them share their insights, expertise, and passions to help businesses all around the world become gooder. Today, we get to welcome Denise Woodard, founder and owner of Partake Foods. You guys probably, well, are you CEO, founder, and owner?
I am CEO, founder, and partial owner.
Oh, partial owner. Okay. Of Partake, a line of allergy-friendly snacks inspired by her daughter's experience with food allergies. Prior to launching Partake, Denise spent a decade in consumer packaged goods at various Fortune 100 companies. And she currently lives in New Jersey with her husband and her five-year-old daughter. Welcome, Denise. How are you today?
I am doing well. It's so nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course. How's New Jersey? I know we just talked about it, but you share with everybody else. What's the weather like today?
Very cold. I think winter is knocking down our door. I think our high is like in the high 30s today. So it's chillier than it's been.
Oh my goodness. I'll take my Seattle weather right now. It's in the 50s still. So it's a little dreary, but I'm fine with that. So I super excited to talk with you today just because, you know, Partake's the darling brand right now. And so I get to kind of talk with somebody that is really inspirational. But just for the group of people that are listening today, maybe give us a quick overview of Partake Foods. What's it all about?
Sure. So at Partake, we make what I like to say are delicious, nutritious, allergy-friendly snacks. The five-year-old that you mentioned has a lot of food allergies. She's allergic to tree nuts and eggs and corn and bananas. I was really frustrated with the options that I was finding for her from a taste perspective, from a nutritional perspective, and most of all, kind of from a brand coolness perspective. And when I couldn't find solutions that satisfied our family's needs, I left my career at Coca-Cola and started Partake.
Oh my goodness. So big move for you. Can you give us some context? You know, one of the things that was, it was probably not as fun for you to relive, but I suppose you tell this story quite a bit, but for those of us listening, tell us about your journey. Like, yeah, okay. You left Coca-Cola. That's a big deal. But then there were some other big moments that were pivotal. In this process. Would you mind sharing that?
Sure. I think since the journey has started, the most pivotal things would be making the leap from corporate America. That happened in August of 2017. Then in the next summer of 2018, we went into our first region of Whole Foods and we tried to raise some friends and family capital. Neither of my parents graduated high school. And so needless to say, I do not have very many accredited investors in my family. So scraping together $5,000 and $10,000 checks to keep the business going was quite the challenge, but we did it and somehow made it through. And then the next summer, we raised a seed round of funding from Jay-Z's Marcy Venture Partners, which was really exciting. And then this year, we launched a bunch of new retailers like Target nationally and expanded with partners like Whole Foods and went into Sprouts and really view 2020 as kind of a coming out year for our brand.
Oh my goodness. Now you are not a baker.
Not at all.
And you specifically chose baked goods. So why baked goods and why not some other shelf stable product?
Sure. So the story with Partake started in the summer of 2016 after we'd had a scare with food allergies with my daughter. Mm-hmm. And our nanny, Martha, who actually has some equity in the company, was like, yo, your daughter has the most boring diet ever. All you give her is like salmon and quinoa and vegetables, and you don't give her anything fun. And so I started to tell Martha all the woes, which I just shared, kind of the nutritional piece, the taste piece. But then she and I started to talk about how many of Vivian's most fond childhood memories, whether it was play dates or birthday parties or holiday celebrations, she wouldn't confidently be able to participate in because of her food allergies. And so I wanted to create a product that I felt like brings people joy. And so I feel like cookies are like a happy product. So eventually we'd love to get into more shelf-stable grocery items, but I felt like cookies were a fun place to start.
Yeah. Okay. And then how was your nanny instrumental in maybe a little product development R&D, or just kind of help catapult you into moving in this direction?
I think two things. I think she kept pushing me, like, so what's going on with the company? Are you going to start the company? When are you going to start the company? So there was that piece. She and I went and spent money at Whole Foods and then failed miserably in the kitchen. And so it was very apparent early on that the reason the usual suspects in the gluten-free aisle are rice flour and xanthan gum and a ton of sugar is because it's easiest to formulate that way. And that's all we could come up with. And so we had to enlist the help of a food scientist to really bring the vision to life.
Gotcha. Okay. So you know, I think you sort of already answered this question, but you know, instead of making do with what you could find in the marketplace, you decided to, no, I'm going to create something from scratch. Is that just inherent part of your personality? Was it that you were kind of in Coca-Cola and you had access to like the what's possible, or how did that, what was the reason other than the need for your daughter? But starting a company is a bigger deal than just buying something off a shelf.
I think a couple of things. So I've always had an entrepreneurial spirit. I had this eBay business when I was working at Coke that ended up making like six figures. Then I had ticket brokering business that I worked on. So I always had these like side hustles, but never anything that was scalable. And then it was pretty serendipitous because my last experience at Coke was working in the Venturing and Emerging Brands Group, where I got to see entrepreneurs firsthand, like Seth Goldman from Honest Tea, and learn about their stories. And I had so much respect for them. But what I learned was they were just regular people who wanted to solve a problem that they were very passionate about. And that's what gave me the confidence to go out and start Partake. Had I not worked in that part of Coca-Cola before leaving, I don't think I would have left my cushy corporate job to do this.
Now, so you have caught the eyes and hearts of consumers, but you've also kind of caught the eyes of some very high profile investors. You mentioned Jay-Z and then her. How did you catch their attention? What is it about what you're doing that they're excited about and they want to participate in? I don't know if you can speak for them, but maybe you can.
Sure. So I think it really goes back to the mission of our brand and our story. For the first year that I launched Partake, it was literally me selling cookies out of my car, doing hundreds of demos. And that most people just kind of respect the hustle. So there was that piece. Thankfully, they liked the product. And then our mission, like the name Partake initially stood for people with food allergies being able to participate. But as a woman and as a person of color, I've realized that there's a lot of more people who need a chance to partake. Yeah. And so through our social mission efforts, I think the product and our story is what resonated with the investors that we've been able to bring on.
Yeah. Well, so you mentioned something interesting because how you and I really connected initially was through Emily Brown at the Food Equality Initiative. And she shared, just actually dropped her podcast last week about what her work is doing and the fact that families and children of color have a higher incidence, is that the word that I'm looking for? Incident rate of food allergies. And so it was so enlightening, and I'm so excited that I get to spread that word. And then again, through you and just kind of go, not only are you wanting to just make a product, I think what was so exciting for me about what you were saying, but you were wanting to make something that tasted good genuinely. And not just something that was simply scalable and cheap, right? And that's hard to do because, you know, your cost per unit and manufacturing at the size that you're in is really hard to kind of keep those expenses down and then be able to take care of the average consumer. Do you struggle with those kind of operational go-to-market issues because of your cost of manufacturing? Or talk about that a little bit.
Definitely so. So I think the bar for Partake products is we're not putting anything in the cookies that I don't feel comfortable giving my daughter.
Okay.
But do I wish we were all organic ingredients? Definitely. But I think that would get us to a price point that just isn't accessible. And I realize even now our price, you know, we're not the same price as an Oreo or Chips Ahoy, which is one of the reasons that we got involved with Emily. Because I was like, well, if our product isn't at stores where people who are food insecure are shopping and the price point is a little too high, buy? Can we give product away? Can we, like, how can we participate in a meaningful way to be able to support consumers who need and deserve our product and may not be able to afford them?
Yeah. And another thing that Emily said is, you know, oftentimes these people still have discretionary income. They're still going to the store and purchasing, but what they don't have the flexibility and ability to do is just throw a handful of products in their cart to see what works. They don't have that flexibility. So providing a product like you to these audiences actually gives you a different consumer base. You're just acquiring them through kind of a different sampling model, I would say, you know. So that's really exciting. I'm glad to see that that is possible through her organization, and it's probably other organizations across the country too that you're tapped into. You probably have a really good visibility on what the needs are out there in the market. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about your funding. The big thing is, and I listened to a lot of other podcasts that you were on and read some things, and I saw this at one point you had gone through 86 rejections. This was in regards to getting initial seed investment. Is that right?
That's correct.
How do you keep going? Like, at what, is you just stubborn?
I think a little bit, it's just insanity, Diana. I think it's stubbornness and insanity. I mean, I think the fact that I started the company for my daughter is one of the things that really kept me going during that period, because while she's still young, she definitely understands the company. I hear her, like, in her bedroom doing, like, pitches for the company sometimes. Like, what is this? But she, like, gets that I started the company because I wanted something better for her, and for me to have given up to understand that, like, I just couldn't live with myself. And then we were getting really good consumer feedback. So I was like, somebody is bound to tell us yes. They have to understand the mission and what we're doing. And I'm very much a big believer in, like, whatever happens, like, things are happen the way they're meant to happen. And so, you know, maybe those no's just made me stronger, because I couldn't, like, imagine a better investor group than what we have. So, you know, it was a painful process at the time, and probably a little insanity and love for my daughter, and just, you know, I don't know what it was that kept us going, but we did. And thankfully the tables have turned a bit now.
Yeah. What we do for our kids, man.
Tell me about it.
And your little sounds like she gets it, right? Sometimes some of us don't necessarily have kids that have that, I don't know what that word is, but they're just not aware of what's happening around them and how it contributes to their life. Do you want to talk about the fact, I think you said, and I went out to try to find differently, but I couldn't find any differently. You mentioned being the first Black woman to raise more than $1 million in seed money. Is that with the partner that you're with now, or is this through a different organization or different firm?
So it was through the seed round of funding we did last summer. And unfortunately, I think I am the first Black woman to have raised $1 million for a packaged food company. I'm hoping that stat changes. Well, I don't know that that can change, but I hope there's a lot more added on to that. But yeah, it's been an interesting journey trying to raise money as a woman, as a person of color.
Yes. I was talking with Kira Dilley at Frito-Lay through the Stacey's Project a few weeks ago, and she talks about the disparity of just women able just getting to, and then you take women and then you put women of color in there, and like the number of women of color that are able to raise enough seed money that it's substantial enough that you can do something with it, she says is incredibly low. And so I know that Stacey's is working to do that, as well as now a whole host of other people. So I am hoping that more has happened since the 2019 raise, correct?
Yep.
So we'll just keep our fingers crossed that we can continue to see that happen. Such a personal journey, and that, you know, and that's why you and Emily are so connected. But did you reach out to her? Did she reach out to you? How did you guys connect?
I think we reached out to her. We'd worked with another organization that supports childhood food insecurity, Blessings in a Backpack, who also does amazing work. They provide backpacks full of food to kids on Friday, to food insecure children, so that they have meals to eat throughout the weekend. And we'd partnered with them. And then I read about Emily's group somewhere, and it just felt even more close to the core of what Partake is, because they were serving families with food, dietary mm-hmm. restrictions and food mm-hmm. allergies. And mm-hmm. we reached out, and she's so lovely, and the work she's doing is so important. I'm so glad that we've had a chance to partner with them and plan to continue to.
Well, and if we talk about food allergies for just a minute, it seems like there's so much growth in this category. And I'm going to ask a really weird question, I think. Do you feel like the demand has changed because there's just more awareness around food sensitivities and that food allergies are growing? Or is it a little bit more of a trendy thing, or maybe a combination thereof? Do you, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like sometimes Whole Foods people shop allergen free, but they're not really allergen free. So where's that demand really coming from, do you think?
I think it's a combination of both. So I believe emergency room visits for peanut related allergic reactions are up nearly 400% over the past like 5 years. Wow. And then the incidence of diagnosed food allergies in kids has doubled over the past 12 years. So there's definitely a large increase in food allergies, but there's also a large, very large increase in people who are shopping free from, because maybe they think eating gluten-free makes them feel better. And it's interesting. We've surveyed our customers recently, and we found that about a little more than half of them don't actually have food allergies. And so they're shopping our brand for a plethora of reasons, whether it's social mission related, whether it's they're on a free from diet, or whether they're looking for like shareable snacks and just want easy solutions in their pantry. So it's been really interesting to learn more about that.
Yeah, I can imagine. And this is just nationwide, or do you know if we're seeing this, is this a global thing or is it a US thing? Do you have visibility on that?
I don't have good stats around global statistics, but I know that in Australia and in Europe, the rate of food allergies has also increased. And so I know oftentimes people blame it like on the GMOs here, but like you look at Europe and like things are increasing there too. And so I don't know. There's so many theories around whether it's like your gut microbiome, if our society's just too clean. I don't know.
Lots Hopefully, of different...
With the incidence, like the increase in incidence, maybe there'll be an increase in food allergy research and we'll get to the bottom of things.
Oh my gosh, that would be great. So what needs do you, when we're thinking about these allergy things that you come from that environment of, you know, my daughter has an allergy, what do you feel are continual unmet needs, or what is it that other CPG brands may not be aware of when they're thinking about this consumer that they could be doing better?
I think the biggest impetus was, like, for lack of better words, kind of that brand coolness factor. I think they're so focused oftentimes on saying what's not in the product that they don't focus on the goodness that's in the product. And like someone who doesn't have food allergies probably doesn't want to try a nut-free, egg-free, gluten-free, soy-free, whatever-free thing, because they're probably going to assume like this tastes bad because what's in it. And then the food allergy people are left with this like only one safe solution that's not like something anybody else would willingly choose to eat. So I think making things that taste good and have ingredients you feel good about, but aren't necessarily just focused on food allergies and just happen to be allergy friendly, would be a way to gain more food allergy customers.
So it's a classic CPG over-indexing on features and benefits rather than on the brand story and the passion, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's probably a common error that especially younger brands typically make. The more established brands get it, but the younger brands kind of over-index on that because they don't necessarily have the sophistication of brand development yet. Depends on who they are, where they come from. Is there anything that you plan on doing? I don't know if you can tip your hat on what the next couple of years looks like for you. And is there anything that you can share about what you're doing to kind of grow your business and kind of get further into the pantry, so to speak?
Sure. So we're launching our first non-cookie product in January. It'll be an e-com only offering. I'm very excited about it. And then our plan is in late 21, early 2022 to start to roll out other products that will sit in the grocery aisle near cookies, hopefully.
Okay. I like that, near cookies. Could it be near cakes? I know that would be a hit in our house.
That would be a hit in my house as well, too. I don't know. No, that's where we're going right away, but eventually hope to be everywhere in the grocery store.
Well, I want to talk about the fact that, you know, I kind of bring it back to you are, Partake is still a darling brand. Like, I think so much of it just comes from who you are, your tenacity and your personality and how you just show up when you're talking with people. You're real, you know, and I love that. It's always true with founder owners. Like, the farther you get into a big organization, you kind of have to put your different professional persona on. It's fair to say, I think, that you guys are a darling brand. And I suspect that you probably are approached by other entrepreneurs for advice, asking for your time. What are you sharing with these people right now? What do you help? Like, what is the common thing that you find yourself sharing with people that are wanting to take something new on?
I think a couple of things. One is, like, you're good enough. I think sometimes people get so intimidated by the CPG industry and all of our acronyms and all of our, like, yes, language and vernacular and how we try, yes, to overcomplicate things. Yes. But, like, this isn't rocket science. And I, yes, think people get so caught up in like making sure everything's perfect and like feeling like they don't understand or they don't have as much funding or they don't have a fancy agency doing things for them. And I'm like, dude, I started selling cookies out of a car, like with some stuff that we created online. Like, if we could figure it out, like, it's possible. And then also, like, to just get started. And I was so guilty of this. Like, I'd read all these like headlines about like so-and-so launches a new product and here's the press release and they're having a fancy party. And I was like, what's wrong with us? We're never going to make it. And I think we actually learned so much from the way that we started that if I could go back and change things, I wouldn't. Because like me doing all of those demos, like, allowed me to learn so much more about who our consumer was, why they were buying our product, what makes us special. And if we had spent more time just trying to get things right, I was going in the wrong direction anyway. And so, like, without just like talking to people, you would never know that.
Is there like any kind of, sometimes is there, it sounds to me like you're the kind of person that would take a warning and kind of put it into a positive spin. So I don't know if there's necessarily like any kind of warning other than you said, just be yourself, which is the warning is don't try to be something that you really aren't.
I think also kind of define success, because like some people, like success to someone may be selling at the local farmer's market and then going to five other farmers market, like, which is amazing. But then success to someone else is like, I want to IPO. And those paths are very different. Yes. And so, you know, your ideas might change along the way in terms of what success looks like, but like define that at the beginning and like work towards that, because that's a very different path than like those two are very different paths.
Yes. Well, I like that, especially what you said earlier about these, the new startup brands or younger entrepreneurial brands. The naturals industry has become a little fancy, for lack of a better description. I've been going to expo shows for over 10 years. Just in five, they've really dramatically changed. It went from this real earnest category to Hollywood almost, I feel like, in a 12-month cycle. And so we went from people who are their best ingredients and the safest and the smartest and to how sexy can I be? And I can see both of those being really intimidating for anybody new, because, you know, if you're just an average Joe like me walking into a floor where everybody's funded by San Francisco money, or you've got Hollywood personalities walking the floor like at Fancy Foods, it can be kind of scary. I'm just an average person. I don't have the right look. I don't have the right height or anything. So I wonder, the entrepreneurs tend to come from a passion, but they also kind of want to get it right and perfect. Where do they tend to, like, where do you feel like people tend to get stuck? Like, I always feel like there's certain little, like, they want to be here. Like, if the package isn't right, then I can't, you know, and it's like, actually, no, that's not really where you're going to get stuck. Do you see that kind of consistency where, like, a couple of moments where people really get stuck that you just want to go, not important, this is important?
I think packaging is actually a really big one that I spend a lot of time talking. And social media, people think social media is so important. And like for our brand, we focus on it, but like there's not a ton of ROI there. And so we focus our efforts in a lot of other places. Yeah. But I think people are so obsessed with how many followers they have on Instagram and if their feed like looks aesthetically pleasing and all these things. And like, I feel like most consumers are regular people. And so they just want real brands and real people and like honest, earnest stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know. I mean, we develop packaging. That's part of what we do. But, you know, sometimes people will get hung up on like the seven needs to look right. And you have to go, that's not going to unsell you, girl. Let's move away from the seven. Let's focus on the messaging, you know. So thank you for sharing that. You know, I wonder if there's anything about your brand or your story that you want to make sure that you share with everybody. Like what is like the most important? I don't know if there's the most important thing, but what would you like to share?
I think oftentimes lately, because now we have all this new distribution and shiny investors, people think that like we had some sort of connections or some sort of magic secret. And it's just a grind. It's like getting out and out here and showing up every single day and doing the work every single day. And then stuff does start to work and things start to, I don't want to say fall into your lap, but luck seems to come into play sometimes too. And like, I think people think sometimes that we have some sort of magic secret, and I don't. We just wanted to make a good product that we felt like consumers would want and to tell our story about why we were doing that. And then the retailers were interested and the investors were interested. And so I think it's like the non-glamorous part that is really what makes a brand and what makes the company.
Yes. You know, we're kind of wrapping up here a little bit. And one of my favorite questions I ask everybody this question is, what is happening in CPG, health, wellness, food, beverage, any of those categories that is a trend or something exciting that you're following? And it doesn't have to even be your category. It could be anything. What is it and why are you excited to watch it?
I think the prevalence of this is, I don't even know if it's the right term, but like ethnic foods. Like I know that there's AO Foods and Yolele and like all these like big authentic brands that I'm so excited to try new products I've never tried before and to introduce them to my family. And they all, the ones that I've come across seem to come from entrepreneurs where that's a part of their heritage authentically and a part of their culture. And they're sharing story and their products with more people. And I'm really excited to see that. Cause I think for a period, things were very like, who can make the cleanest product and who can add the most adaptogens and make this the least carbs. And like, well, I guess that might work for some people. Like that wasn't like, those weren't trends I was excited about, but this like homage to people's like true culture and diversity, I'm really excited to see.
Yeah. I remember writing an article a couple of years ago, kind of going, hey, naturals category, like can only have a Salisbury steak five ways before it's boring, maybe one way, but you know, I was just joking, but I'm like, and we're supposed to be the melting pot here. So what's going on? I think places like the Hatchery out of Chicago, I don't know if you're familiar with them, these incubators that are really encouraging the neighborhood entrepreneurs to bring their product to the market is really what's driving some of that. And I like really want to champion those incubators and the investors that are encouraging that growth. I don't know if you're familiar with those places.
I'm familiar. I don't know the Hatchery super well. I was a part of the Chobani incubator. And what I really like that they've done most recently is focus on women-owned and diverse companies. And really, and I'm in New York, but like there's so many food companies here. Like I love that they went to like Charleston, South Carolina, and to Baltimore, and to Texas, and to other places that aren't New York, San Francisco, Boulder, and New York to find entrepreneurs. Because there's some people doing some really cool stuff outside of those major cities.
Yeah. Tell us a little interesting fact about your category or your product, something that, you know, is a nice little like, hey, did you, you know, something I can share with my girlfriends during my next Zoom happy hour.
Oh, that's a tricky one, Diana. I think what I found recently that I mentioned this earlier that I found really interesting as we've been talking to our consumers more, I think our consumer base has grown. So we have more people to talk to. And the fact that so many of our consumers don't have food allergies and like how many of them are just choosing our product because they think it tastes good, because the mission resonates with them. I've been really excited to see that. I don't know. I don't have that many interesting facts about my product. Okay. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I actually, the thing that I love most about your entire story is your nanny calling you out on your daughter's diet. That's probably the funnest thing for me. How are you keeping yourself safe and sane these days? Lockdown, weather, all of it.
It's starting to wear on me. I was just telling one of my girlfriends this morning, like I'm usually very much a like see the bright side of things and like our business is thriving. My family's been healthy. So like I have no real complaints, but God, I would love to go on a trip and I would love to hug a friend and see my girlfriends and go to a coffee meeting and all these things I took for granted. So I think I'm keeping sane by hugging my immediate family that's close to me in my little pod and trying to make fun, like have fun where we can, whether it's just like Friday night pizza night or watching holiday movies. I'm usually like, we can't start Christmas until after Thanksgiving this year. I'm like, bring it on. I need all the cheer I can get. Just trying to find like little moments of joy and knowing that like this too shall pass and we'll be on the other side of this at some point. So I just need to try to keep each other as safe as possible and as cheerful as possible.
Yeah. I wish I could offer, like, there's not a whole lot of choices other than I have started exercising outside, even in the crummy weather, just for the brain to have something different to look at and the skin to have something different to feel, if that makes any sense, but I can understand.
I went on a walk right before this call, which is why I'm wearing this athletic apparel. But yes, I just started doing that. Total game changer for my mental health in the middle of the day.
Right. And it, you know, I love my family, but now I'm with them 24/7 and it's just different because that means I have to be mom and spouse all the time. Instead of go to work, I can shed that for a few hours, or when I'm with some friends, I can shed my professional, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So yeah, get outside and just be you for a little bit and breathe. Thank goodness that we can still do that at least for now.
Yes.
You know, we are wrapping it up. I wonder if people want to connect with you for any reason at all, do you prefer they reach out to you through LinkedIn or do you have a different way that you prefer?
LinkedIn is perfect. And if you want to learn more about the company, we're on all social media channels at Partake Foods. And if you want to talk to me, I'm on LinkedIn.
Yes. And I'm just going to thank you so much, not just for your time, but the work that you're doing. And, you know, we're watching you from all the way across the country in Seattle and watching the good works here. So congratulations and keep up the good work.
Thank you. It still blows my mind that anyone besides my mom and my daughter know that we exist as a company. So thank you. Thank you for having me. It was so nice to chat with you.
This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a creative marketing firm specializing in growing, fixing, and reinventing brands in the food, beverage, wellness, and fitness industries. If your naturals brand is in need of positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we're here to help. You can find more information at retail-voodoo.com. And so there you go. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to this channel and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.